BP's Tony Hayward speaks.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. We're going to get a take on the global perspective now, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects us here in the United States. It's only been a few days since the British oil giant BP announced its CEO, Tony Hayward, would step down. Now he's given his first interview since the announcement. In the Wall Street Journal, Hayward says he thinks he was made a scapegoat for the Gulf of Mexico oil disaster and for BP's response to it. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us live to talk about it. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Steve.
What else is Hayward saying in this article?
He claims he handled the crisis rather well, although he does regret some of the comments he made at the time. He also says he actually wanted to stay on as CEO, but felt he had to agree to quit for the sake of the company. Because I love the company, he says, I must leave it. He also reveals that BP's polling shows that the company's poll rating has begun to recover and that it is still rated more highly than Goldman Sachs. I'm not sure how reassuring that is for BP.
It sounds like he has a lot to say. So I want to talk about BP's role, Stephen, in the release of the convicted terrorist in the Pan Am Lockerbie bombing. Now, Hayward refuses to testify to U.S. lawmakers, and British and Scottish officials now are not cooperating either. What's the next step there?
Well, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Robert Menendez, says he wants to bring his inquiry to British soil. As you say, his committee wants to find out whether there was a link between BP winning a $900 million oil and gas deal with Libya and the early release of the Libyan man convicted of the Lockerbie bombing, the bombing of that plane over Scotland in 1988, in which 270 people died. Well, the head of the Scottish government, Alex Salmond, says his ministers won't take part in a formal Senate inquiry wherever it's held.
My ministers, my officials, are responsible to the Parliament and people of Scotland. They're not, with enormous respect to Senator Menendez, responsible to the American Senate.
All this is more unwelcome publicity for BP, which, under that $900 million deal, begins drilling in Libyan waters shortly.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Let's check numbers. BP shares are off about 2% right now. Shares in Europe are down at the moment as well, about 0.5%. Wall Street yesterday, the S&P and NASDAQ were off again, 0.5% or so. The Dow gave back about 0.3%, 30 points to close at 10,467. In about an hour and a half, we're going to get a first glance at American economic growth for the second quarter. Now, analysts are expecting the nation's gross domestic product expanded at an annual rate of 2.5%, but that is slower than the quarter before. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce today holds a conference on underfunded state pensions and health benefit plans. At that summit, the chamber says states should do what a lot of private companies do, cut contributions to retirement plans during lean times. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer explains.
Pension plans for state and local government workers are at least $1 trillion in the red. That's according to the Pew Center on the States. Generous retirement plans were offered to employees who didn't have to pay in. Governments were responsible for pension payments, but they didn't put enough money in. To make matters worse, fund investments tanked during the financial crisis. What to do now? Aaliyah Wong of the Chamber of Commerce says future state workers will have to share the burden.
There will be more cost sharing, which will mean, you know, if you want a richer benefit, you have to make more of a contribution from your own paycheck.
Joshua Rao teaches finance at Northwestern University. He says if states don't act, they'll go Greek.
We will run into a Greece-style debt crisis in states like Illinois and New Jersey, and where basically the state ceases to function.
Some states have gotten the message. Pew says 15 states have raised the retirement age for new workers or curbed their benefits. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace. Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act.
New rules for air cargo start next week. All shipments that fly along with passengers on commercial aircraft must be screened for security. The shipping industry has had a few years to work on the new rules, but there have been setbacks, as Marketplace's Eve Tro reports.
Most travelers have no idea the belly of their plane is filled with much more than luggage.
Virtually all passenger planes have cargo. It might be electronics, it might be food products, any kind of merchandise.
Peter Quinter is a customs lawyer in Florida, a major shipping hub.
Most passenger airlines, a huge percentage of their revenues and more of their profit comes from the cargo than it does from the passengers.
But all that cargo is a security risk.
So it might go from Hong Kong to Singapore, Singapore to London, London to New York.
Homeland Security sees those transfers as weak links where someone could sneak a bomb onto a plane. Up to now, only a percentage of cargo has been screened. Starting Sunday, every shipment must be certified. It's taken years to build systems to do this, says David Brooks. He's president of American Airlines Cargo Division.
There hasn't been screening devices that can accommodate the small envelope all the way up to pallets that weigh 10,000 pounds that we may get.
Picture those X-ray conveyor belts for luggage, but big enough for a hot tub, and with advanced technology to detect explosives. Brooks says American Airlines alone spent $10 million on new screening gear. It will charge clients for the service, and those companies will pass the cost along to you and me.
Cell phones, the computers, all the things that tend to go by air, at the end of the day, it's going to be the consumers who are going to see more cost.
But that's the price of increased security. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
And finally, all the business news of the week in a Marketplace Minute. Here's Bill Radke.
Colgate did so-so in terms of selling Dynamo and Speed Stick and Toms of Maine. They only saw a modest gain in Handy Wipes and Ambisol and Ultra Bright and Fab and all the soaps and toothpaste that they sell. Profits soared at Sony, Shell, Motorola, Mitsubishi. Boeing sales were kind of squishy. Kellogg said the other day sales were blah for Special K and Apple Jacks and Honey Smacks and Mini Wheats and other treats like Pop-Tarts and Cruncheroos and Cinnamon Marshmallow Scooby-Doos. Lockheed did succeed. Exxon, Avon, yes, indeed, they did. And so did Conoco. Hyundai, yes. Nintendo, no. The final name I have in mind lost more than all those firms combined. It can't be a thrill to lose $17 billion, but then don't do the drill if you can't clean the spill.
Marketplace's Bill Radke. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.